Something had to be shaken up. Something had to change. We were in a static place, stood on a slow death march to losing in like places like Virginia and Minnesota. And that is not happening anymore. And I'm ready to, I am like still, I'm so pumped. I haven't like been sleeping. So now I'm like getting very tired, but I am so pumped. Just, and like, if I'm this pumped, like imagine, I don't know, a bunch of like 20 somethings or whatever. Like, did you see the registrations that are happening right now? The new voting reg
didn't notice
stuff.
That.
Like, yeah, it needed this kick in the pants.
Hey there, it's JVL here with my best friends, Sarah Longwell and Tim Miller of The Bulwark. Before we get started, my best friends are going to Dallas, to Tejas, without me on September 5. If you are in the Dallas Metroplex, I think that's what they call it down there. I don't know. Mm. It's like 9,000 square miles of Dallas.
Big D.
Big D. Big D. Not tiny D. September 5, you should go and hang out with them because since I'm not there, it will be like 100% more fun. And everybody will have a good time. I will not be in the corner huffing into a bag on Xanax. It'll just be like normal people who can have normal conversations with each other. And I heartily recommend it. September 5 in Dallas. Go to thebulwark.com/events to get your tickets. Thebulwark.com/events. Hey, guys, anything happened since we were together last time?
Let's see. That was what? Last Wednesday?
Last Wednesday. Kind of weird. Kind of weird.
I just, I think what happened,
dinner party.
I think what happened was there was a national assessment of our correctness.
Yeah, let's not lead with that. Let's lead with all the face
of the
world.
You don't want this to be the smuggest podcast in the history
you know what? We
of
can
American
do a
podcasting,
of...
the most self-important and smug podcast in American history. That's what I was going
and
for.
And I was
can do
trying
5 minutes
to take
on
it off your
later.
Shoulders. I was trying to take it off your shoulders since the two of you have been insufferable. I just thought I would throw
I
in.
Mean, I think I've barely talked about this at all. I mean, privately I have. But in public, I've been very, very good. I've been a very good boy.
Not you me. Literally put a shirt on that says JVL is always right.
I mean, I just grabbed the first thing that was in the drawer. so listen.
We can do news first.
All the face of the world has changed. I think that's Emily Barrett Browning. That is where we are right now. I propose to you, and then we can discuss it, that the first 4 days of the post-Biden era have gone as well as anybody could have even unreasonably hoped. We had, let me just set the table.
It's only been 3 days for starters, and I think it's gone about as well as I would have expected. So I disagree on both points.
Oh, okay, yeah. So you would have expected zero challenges and the, what, $127 million she's raised?
All right. Sorry,
and
we're
the
going
polls,
back to rightness. I didn't expect zero challenges. I thought maybe somebody might challenge her. This is something that sometimes people miss in the nuance of all this. I just thought that whatever the outcome it ended up being, besides Joe Biden, was going to be fabulous. I knew that people would be extremely excited. I knew that there would be a grassroots enthusiasm for literally anybody that could give a speech and give people hope and give people optimism. I didn't know. I guess the one thing that has pleasantly surprised me is I think that the vice president's performance has been really strong.
Yeah.
Like not like I would have expected maybe like a B minus from her. And I'd say probably she's been like an A minus, like very strong, just totally figure skating judging side of things. So I guess that part of it has been a pleasant surprise. But no, that everything else has gone pretty much exactly like I thought it would have.
Okay. Sarah?
I was not as certain as Tim. So I obviously, if you had asked me my like fantasy opportunity, right, I'm going for the Whitmer Shapiro dream ticket. But even in reality, watching how this played out, I think that it was choreographed pretty perfectly. And one of the things I don't
use. I got to interrupt you, though. It
Why?
Wasn't choreographed. I'm sorry. It wasn't. That word is important. You said the word choreographed. And all the normies in my life are like, wow, they really planned this well, this handoff. They really planned it well. They didn't plan it at all. Joe Biden, like it happened by accident in Rehoboth Beach. And it just has worked out well because there
is
was just
destiny really an accident,
whoa, whoa,
Timothy?
Whoa.
Yeah,
hold on.
Destiny. They didn't choreograph anything.
Hold on. Here's what I mean by that, and you tell me if you don't think that this means choreographed, which is that I did not anticipate necessarily, and I think actually I argued about this with JVL on the Secret Pod. My sense was that there was no love lost between Biden and Kamala and their teams. And so I wasn't necessarily expecting him to, out of the gate, endorse her. And when I first saw his statement, I thought, oh, he didn't endorse Kamala. Like, we are heading in. And then, like, 30 minutes later, it came. And then it was sort of done from there. Like, mm-hmm. once he endorsed her, and it was becoming, and it was clear she was the front runner, and, like, all the people who wanted to be VP or in her administration came out, it's like, okay, this is how this is going to happen. And I didn't necessarily think that was exactly how it was going to happen. I thought the way that it happened was the best case scenario for her.
Yeah, I didn't either think it was exactly how it was going to happen. My point is that it wasn't choreographed like that. Like, Joe Biden decided to make this endorsement while he was in a bunker in Rehoboth Beach talking to, like, three or four people. And then, like, the train just left the station. I mean, Carville on the podcast on Tuesday was just like, hey, when a parade starts marching, I grab a baton. Like, I just think that's what happened. Like, yeah. That he put that out, the statement out. I think that people, there was kind of this moment of uncertainty. I think that the reporting is true that Nancy wanted an open process. Like, Nancy hasn't told me that personally, but I have good reason to believe that was true. And it just was like the momentum, like, just took over. Sometimes, you know, momentum takes over in life and in politics. It wasn't like Nancy and Chuck and Hakeem and Joe and Mike Donilon were all on a conference call and we're like, okay, here's going to be the thing. We're going to put out a press release and then we're going to endorse Kamala and then we're all going to endorse her and then we're going to be unified. I think that the unity came because she rose to the occasion, because there was just this desperation for to be excited about something.
Yeah, I mean, somebody I read back on July 3rd, there was a piece somewhere about how
he's talking about one of Biden's pieces. I can tell by his eyes that this is a
July 3rd.
When Biden stepped aside, that the only possible replacement was Kamala Harris for a whole bunch of logistical reasons, one of which being there is a campaign with state offices and employees everywhere and an organization, and that she was the only person who could inherit that, who would just walk in the front door and own it. And I think what happened was everybody realized that at the same time. And this, as you said, it was so when I think I sort of agree with Tim, if it had been choreographed, it would have been Biden makes a statement with Kamala Harris standing there, and then, like, the entire firmament of Democratic stars standing behind them. Like, that would have been, that's not what happened. What happened instead was a little bit like the movement to Biden post Nevada.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
I mean, this was like, it wasn't choreographed. Everybody just realized that the Democratic Party, it turns out, is full of realists.
Yeah.
And yeah.
It was very similar to that, right? Yeah. It was like, okay, we got to do this right now or it's going to be Bernie. And I think that this was version of that was, we got to do this right now with Kamala. Like,
what happened was it was a responsible political party that was not doing fantasy politics, was not sitting dreaming about how they could stick it to the conservatives they hate, or, you know, like, that was just thinking practically about, boy, we have an important election we have to win. There's only one thing to do. Okay, let's just do it right now. I think the Democratic Party deserves a lot of credit for that.
Yeah, I mean, if Joe Biden hadn't endorsed her, what would have happened? Do you think the same thing would have happened?
Yes. It might have been 12 hours delayed or 24 hours delayed, but it's the same thing. It's the only answer.
I think, yeah. So here's what I think would have happened. If we just want to play fantasy for a sec, just kind of like imagine. I think if Joe Biden hadn't endorsed her, there would have been a period of buzz about why he hadn't.
Sure.
You know, I think that then there would have been a group of people that would have come out for her quite quickly.
Yeah.
There would have been people like your friend Gavin and J.B. Pritzker, who kind of held their fire for a day or two and are like, do I have an opening here? I have an opening here. And then Kamala would have given her first speech and people would have been like, oh my God, she's great. Actually, this is totally fine and perfect. And everybody's desiring this. And then those guys would have been like, okay, I'm for Kamala. Like, I think that's what I think that, you know, and maybe there would have been a few more Politico Axios stories, Jim Vandehyde sending a fire alarm. There's behind the scenes, there is a Biden staffer that's talking with Nancy and they're talking with Gavin. And like, I think that there would have been one more day of newsletters like that in the political gossipy press.
This is what I mean. And I guess I'll grant you, I still think a podium should have been involved in this whole thing. I think that, you know, I got like yelled at on the live stream for like having being, you know, nitpicky, but I don't know. I think like stepping down as the, when you are the sitting president, you're going to step down for running again and you're going to endorse your vice president. Feels like we should have video of that just for posterity, like just for history. Instead, like a letter on X felt insufficient to the moment for me, but whatever. The part that I'm saying is like Biden endorsing her allowed it to happen fast, seamless. There was no room for doubt that crept in. There wasn't room for people to shiv her, whatever. And as a result, she like skipped into things in a way that was fast. It consolidated fast, and it actually consolidated like in the macro sense very fast, but in the micro sense slow enough that it built momentum and like kind of some excitement, and everybody started to get on board and you saw the parade coming together. And so I guess that's what I mean by choreographed. But you're right.
That's fair. I was just nitpicking the word because literally every normie in my life is like, that's what they say to me. Like, wow, how did they plan this to look so, to make it work out so great? And I'm just like, I don't know. That's not what was happening.
This is a perfect storm.
Yeah, that was a perfect
storm. I mean, that's what this is. It's a perfect storm. And so one of the points I'd wanted to make today was that I see what you're saying, Sarah, about like a bunch of individual points about, like, for instance, Biden should have been on video somewhere or something or in person. And those in individual points, those are all true. And yet the way the entire thing came together, I think, helped her perfectly. It's actually useful that the old guy hasn't been visible for a few days. So the spotlight is entirely hers.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But entirely. This is, I do not, if Joe Biden steps down after the 2022 midterms, well, not steps down, but says, I'm not going to run, I don't think Kamala Harris is the nominee. Probably. No, that's not even true. Maybe she is the nominee. But if she's the nominee, she's a badly damaged nominee and
much weaker than she
much weaker. I believe looking at this that a whole bunch of things which shouldn't be true are turning out to create a confluence of events in an environment which is the best of all worlds for her, in which her strengths are maximized and her weaknesses are minimized. And I mean, if I were the Trump people, I would be terrified right now. I think the Fabrizio memo they sent out yesterday where they were like, hey, for the next third of the campaign that's left, we'll probably be losing. You know, they called it a honeymoon. They're like, yeah, for the next month, she'll be on this honeymoon. Well, there's only 100 days left. So if for the next 30 days she's ahead, that's kind of a problem for you.
Voting starts like about 2 weeks after that.
In September in Pennsylvania. Yeah.
So I it just looks like a perfect storm where all the things that would normally be bad for her have turned out to be good for her. And I think she's in a very strong position.
Right, I agree with that. I have a few worries and... But also a few positive surprises about the situation. Which one do you want first? The worries? JVL feels
worries.
Like he needs worries.
Always.
Well, yeah, start with worries and then follow it up.
Yeah, we'll get around to it. Here are my existing worries. I totally agree that not having Joe Biden visible and around has been amazing for her. The only bad part of the public effort since Sunday has been the Joe Biden dial-in to the campaign headquarters, which nobody saw because she ends up giving a great speech. But just as somebody who's watched literally every second of content Kamala or Joe Biden has put out for the last 2 weeks, like that was awkward. It was a little uncomfortable. Moment then. The Kamala talking about Joe was nice, but Joe talking was awkward and uncomfortable for me. And
what about it?
It's just kind of like, this is going to be a little mean, and I don't mean it to be mean, but I just want to be descriptive. It felt to me kind of like when it's during COVID, when you had to do a FaceTime with grandma and you had your 5-year-old in the room, and like you kept having to be like, hey, will you focus on the, will you talk to her, please? Like, will you please give her? And then she's like, no, wait, but I'm playing over her. Oh. It just like, yeah, I know. Damn. You're wincing because that's how it felt. It felt wincing. It was like, we've got him on FaceTime over here, and everybody in the room's like, great, 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 but I kind of want to hear from her over here. You know, the vibe felt awkward, and I'm worried.
Oh, I didn't feel that way. Can I just say that I didn't feel that way? Thought his whole, like, I love you, kid, and you're going to do great. I don't know. I thought it was kind of sweet.
Great. I would love to. Maybe I'm wrong. I would love for that. I'm expressing my truth. For me, it was very uncomfortable. So this leads to the more significant concern, though. I don't love... I like that it's been turnkey and there's been no leaks. Awesome. Huge kudos to the vice president and the people around her throughout all this. There's not been a single Mike Allen story that's like, she's angling or she's annoyed at the Biden team. I don't know if I can say huge kudos. Acknowledgements to the Biden team that there's been no leaks and going the other direction. That said, do we have to have everybody around still? I don't know that I want Mike Donilon
around.
You
want them to change the campaign staff up?
Not. I don't need to fire everybody. I'm not saying that. All my friends that are working on that campaign that are at mid-level positions, you're doing a good job. What I don't want is people stand... I don't want the vice president or anybody in their team feeling like they got to go overboard defending the Biden record, worried about what the president thinks about what they're saying, what their strategy is, worried about having a new frame that goes against what the pollsters and advisors from the last guys thought. I don't know. It's just my spidey senses are up a little bit on it. It's been good so far. So I don't have any complaints. Actually, I think her stump speech has been really good. I thought JBL's breakdown of it yesterday on YouTube was awesome. People should go check that out. It felt very Kamala. So maybe this is unfounded worry, but it's just, I'm putting a pin in it. And I just think it's worth monitoring that it would be better for the we're not going back message that she laid out to like not go back and not talk about it and almost pretend like, you know, it was like the bad times that you don't, you know, it's like when your parents got separated and you're like, we don't talk about that. We don't talk about that 3 months anymore. Like we're going forward. We're not going back. And I worry about
just
that.
Just hold on. Just logistically, isn't it? It's just Jen. I mean, Jen O'Malley Dillon is like the head of the apparatus. She's doing, it's not Donilon.
Donilon said he wasn't going anywhere.
Oh.
Can I mean, I just as a,
and maybe that's a face saving thing. Again, I'm not in these rooms. I would rather just whoever's in the room when they're like, what are the ads going to be? What's Kamala's convention speech going to be? Who's going to speak at the convention? What's the order? I would like for nobody who is a close personal friend of Joe Biden to be involved in those decisions. Not because those are bad people or because they've showed bad instincts, but just because they have a conflict.
Yeah.
Like she is not on the ballot anymore.
She needs entire permission. And I sort of feel like somebody like Jen would give this. Would be like, obviously, like you need to, because what she, the ideal scenario here is like own the shit that's good, distance yourself from the shit that's bad. Right. Like that is like, just do that.
I mean, just as a management thing, I would agree with this again, if we were looking at 6 months or a year, but for a 100-day sprint, I would keep everybody in place. So that there is no bad feelings. Nobody feels like they're being scapegoated or like, you know, well, Bob over there just got tossed out. Maybe I'm next. I would keep everybody exactly where they are. And I would bring in a layer to work, not above necessarily, but to work with the top layer of people who...
Fresh eyes.
The candidate, right. And who the candidate
unburdened
trusts.
Unburdened by what has been.
Who are unburdened. Totally, totally. And I would, that's how I would, again, just from a management perspective, if I was taking over any sort of company or operation for a 100-day mission and sprint, that is how I would do it. And
I think that is how they'll do it. I think keeping everybody was smart. I do not think you do big shakeups right now. I agree with you, Tim, on Donilon. I actually didn't know that because Donilon's like, he's just Biden's guy. Like he's not the campaign apparatus. He's just like the Biden guy.
And again, I just want to repeat, I don't have inside sources on this.
No.
You'll be shocked to hear that the Biden high command, not exactly their best buddy. They're not just, you know, kind of calling me to chat at the moment. I'm telling you what I've seen in the newspaper, which is that he said, and that could just be the kind of thing that you say, you know, you're like, oh yeah, I'll still be around.
Yeah. But, you know, but I think keeping them is good. I think they will bring in some of Kamala's people, obviously, that she trusts, that she can talk to. But here would be my bigger advice, just going along with what JBL says. And I think that they will do this. This is my fervent hope. When people are like, what could go wrong? Obviously, there's lots of things. But one of them is that people get territorial about this stuff instead of throwing all in and being like, I will relitigate nothing. Like, we are all moving forward, because it really is. Even I have had many temptations on Twitter to go relitigate many a thing that have been said over the last few weeks.
Have you not done that?
haven't. Oh. I haven't. I have my, my draft folder.
Can you teach me how to do that?
My draft folder is fire right now.
Did you send me a screenshot?
and we can vent a little bit of that on here if you want, but like just for but for the campaign, they need to work together in the most all in. We are doing this together. Like, let's go get it. And let me tell you, that's been the vibe from everybody, right? Like the idea.
But that's because things have gone right. Yeah. Right. I mean, but first polls had shown her down six, like if it had shown her performing worse.
Polls don't even matter right now. It's not that. It's the excitement. It's the excitement for people. And this is the thing that I think we were most right about.
Because it was the right choice.
Yeah. Right. Is like we had to shake. Something had to be shaken up. Something had to change. We were in a static place, stood on a slow death march to losing in like places like Virginia and Minnesota. And that is not happening anymore. And I'm ready to, I am like still, I'm so pumped. I haven't like been sleeping. So now I'm like getting very tired, but I am so pumped. Just, and like, if I'm this pumped, like imagine, I don't know, a bunch of like 20 somethings or whatever. Like, did you see the registrations that are happening right now? The new voting reg
stuff.
It needed this kick in the pants. This is what we needed everywhere. Yeah.
And success begets more success, right? Once people have hope, this is the other thing. I do think, I mean, I see this myself even, where I'm looking at the race and now saying, no, I actually think there's a fully viable path to victory here for her.
Totally.
And you see it even now. I mean, I see it in the comments and, you know, over at the Bulwark, where people who previously had been like, yeah, no, I mean, I know we can do it. I know we can do it. Are now like, oh, actually, no, I feel like we can win now. And that is the vibe shift.
So I want the back half of this podcast to be all happiness and recriminations. Can I give you the two other things that I'm
because happiness
about?
And recriminations are the same thing.
They go hand in hand together. Okay, so here are the two other things that the podcast with Brownstein yesterday was so good and very optimistic. Brownstein's so smart, but like I worry a little bit about like the places where Kamala brings the most benefit. Or like the places where the ticket was doing the worst.
Yeah, Georgia.
And the places where she, it's Georgia, North right? Carolina. It would be the state that stands out. Georgia, North Carolina. The areas where she brings the potential downsides are the states where Biden was doing the best, Wisconsin. And so I worry a little bit about when we're saying, yes, perfect storm so far in momentum, in energy, in all of that. This is a perfect storm. I don't know how to break this analogy. Like, does that break down? Is it the inverse on the electoral?
I see exactly what you mean.
I do too. But let me just tell you, she has to run this race like she's trying to win Wisconsin. Like, if you try to run this race like you are trying to do it through the Sun Belt by turning out Black voters, like, there's not enough. The numbers aren't enough. Like, if I find them chasing,
you don't think she can win Georgia?
No, I think she can win Georgia, but I don't think she can win North Carolina. Okay. And so I think that putting together, like if you lose Pennsylvania, the number of states you have to pull together to make up for that loss, like I don't think the strategy, I haven't listened to Brownstein, your podcast with Brownstein, but I want to, but I have been, I am familiar with, there's like this new line of thinking that the map changes.
Yeah.
And I don't think the map should change. Because I don't, and look, my central argument for Biden on the numbers was about older white voters, that they were sticking with him, and that Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin, and Nebraska too, have a lot of those people, and that you could offset some losses with Black and Hispanic voters and young voters with the number of reliable voters who were old and white. And so I share Tim's concern. That being said, this is where I'm optimistic, potentially to a fault, and I could revise this as I go, but I'm going to say this is how I feel right now. Kamala has got to, I think she has to run a race like she's trying to win those states. And I think that means that she has, so one of the things all I've gotten, and I'm sorry to the reporters who have been calling me, who want to know about focus groups and Kamala, just take this. You can quote anything I say from this. I can't call you all back because I'm just really underwater. Let me just tell you, for months, I've been asking about Kamala, but years. They have a broadly negative impression of her. broadly negative impression, but it is very much an impression. And it is based, the thing that comes out of their mouth all the time is, what does she even do? I don't see her. I don't know anything about her. Honestly, I can't even have an opinion on her because what does she even do? Where is she? That, I've been hearing that for forever. And I was hearing from them the negative impression part. And it's just like, man, nobody likes her. So like, how is this person? But then when I, sometimes you can listen to things and not hear them. And as soon as we had to grapple with Kamala for real, I heard it in a different light, which is people saying, yeah, I don't know. Who knows, right? And so then suddenly it's like, well, the upside is if she can reintroduce herself to people, right? They don't have a fixed, they don't have a fixed feeling on her. They just have like vibes on her. So what she's doing right now, and this is why I'm so jacked and why I was so jacked after her first speech, because I was like, wait a minute. She looks and sounds great. She seems comfortable. There's no yips. She's got the, she's doing it. She has this chance to reintroduce herself. And I think she needs to reintroduce herself to voters as a moderate-ish prosecutor who thinks we need to secure the border, because that person's in there somewhere. They are going to try to lock her into who she was when she was running to Joe Biden's left in 2020. But you can, she can counteract that by not being that person and not having those positions.
So this ties to my last concern. Those positions she took in the 2020 campaign, we've already seen this Dave McCormick ad that everybody's sending around. Also, I think are potentially damaging in those key states, particularly, you know, extreme positions on energy and immigration. And Trump's team, because Biden was so weak, didn't spend any money on TV all summer. And so while they've been totally disorganized and disoriented and like pathetic in their response in the media in the first 3 days, the ads, their ad response is to turn her into a California liberal is going to be, I think, pretty real.
Yeah, which is why they should take the $250 million they have raised in like 72 hours and start dumping it on TV to introduce her as a hard-edged prosecutor who goes after bad guys and wants to secure the border and thinks fracking is fine.
JBL, what do you think about that?
Yeah, I basically agree. Although, I don't,
probably,
you know,
don't,
Sarah,
talk about fracking. You have to talk about fracking.
Some of that maybe reintroduce her as the hard edge prosecutor, but I think the introductions maybe need to be a little more forward looking. And I mean, you know, she's running a middle class kitchen table issue campaign about the future. She's not trying to make this a referendum on Trump. And this is what I wanted to ask you about, Sarah. Do you think that she should be trying to make this a referendum on Trump, or should she try to have that stuff be implicit and tied into the I'm a prosecutor thing that's part of her identity? And so her identity is a referendum on Trump, whereas the campaign itself is future oriented, turn the page, wipe the slate. This is what we're going to do to build the middle class.
I agree with that. But the fact is, and I don't think she should like play defense and like answer for all of the things she said. But I think when she talks about who she is and what matters, I do think some of the things she's got to talk about have to address the enormous liability that comes with right now people's feeling about the border. I think that there's got to be, I think she can't be completely shut off to some of the energy independent stuff. It's too important in a bunch of these states. And so I agree with you. And when I have been arguing to people about how she'd approach this, I say prosecuting the case against Trump can be the reintroduction of her. Just by doing it, she can show people who she is. But that doesn't mean that she can't have no positions on like who she's going to be. I agree with broad rebuilding the middle class. But let me tell you, you know what's rebuilt the middle class in Pennsylvania? Do you know why Pennsylvania is not like some of these other states? Is because they've had an energy boom.
Yeah, can't we just tie that stuff together though, JVL? I mean, I'm going to put the border on the side. That's why the fracking thing worries me less. And her speech in Milwaukee was very focused on, you know, like Project 2025 is, you know, them giving tax breaks to rich people instead of Project 2025 is Schedule F, you know, and I think that's good. So talking about that, talking about childcare, paid family leave, that's right in line for her. You know, I think that's a good place. We can just throw in I think especially now that we're only 3 months away, we don't have a primary, we don't have to worry about everything so much. Can't we just throw in, and oh, by the way, we are currently producing the most energy ever in American history, and I plan to continue doing that.
Oil production is the highest it's ever been, and we're going to keep that going.
Let's just throw that.
Those are the Biden-Harris policies that made oil production so high, right?
Yeah,
and we're going to pass the bill that James Lankford negotiated on securing our border and reforming our immigration system to provide pathways to blah, 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 right?
Sarah, I want you to tell me, am I crazy on this border thing? I was just thinking about this. I've just been racking all this around my head. And their cleanest hit on her is borders are.
Yes.
They're obsessed with it. Is the 2024 election really going to be about the border? To me, that's kind of like, if you have one weakness, should maybe we just throw that one and just be like, good luck. Good luck. If you want to win this election in the upper Midwest by talking about the border.
I don't think that people realize how vulnerable Democrats are on immigration, how much it is talked about by swing voters, how much it is talked about by black voters. Like the immigration stuff, people think it is insane. Democrats, people, there's a reason John Fetterman talks about immigration in Pennsylvania. People think that our immigration policies, which are non-existent, they think it's insane that they're non-existent. And if I were Kamala, all I would say is we are going to represent generational change, and we are finally going to tackle the issue of immigration in a way that other people have just used it as a way to divide us and then do nothing about it the way Trump did nothing about it when we offered him a compromise. Like, there are ways to do this where, and she, because it is so short, she doesn't need a 1,000-point plan on immigration, but I don't think she can ignore immigration.
I agree with that. Okay, I guess my point is, my broader point is, if Kamala's main frame is future versus past, personal freedom versus old guy that wants to take it away, prosecutor versus criminal, and his frame is they want the border to be open. Is that really it? That we're going to go into autocracy because people are worried about much about the border? I just am a little skeptical that is like that powerful in this right now in this moment. I just think all the pundits all the time go on TV and it's a very popular thing to be like, people don't care about democracy. Don't talk about democracy. And like that doesn't affect their lives. Like whose life in Wisconsin is the current problem at the border affecting today? Nobody's.
That's not right. I'm sorry. I don't think that's right. And one of the main reasons is that I think both Trump has done a good job and it is a real conversation. The opioid crisis and the crisis of
opioid. We're trying it into fentanyl.
Fentanyl.
We're trying it into fentanyl, even though that's not true. But yeah, okay. And fentanyl comes in mostly through ports of entry and airports.
But think about what happened in Georgia when the illegal immigrant killed.
That's a horrible story.
This is an issue that grabs people and people care about it. The fentanyl stuff is, if you talk to anybody in the Midwest, they know people who've died from it, especially sort of white working class.
Yeah, sure.
And they see that as an immigration issue. I just don't think you can ignore it.
That's fair. I'm just backing down. My mind's eye, I'm like, why did we lose American democracy in the year 2024? And it's like, because Trump really exploited the border. I don't know. It just feels like it's a lot weaker than the Joe Biden contrast because it is, and that's going to show in the polls. But like it just feels like a little bit of a weaker tea than
immigration and the economy are what everybody talks about. Swing voters and even like soft Dems and certainly the Trump folks.
All right, Tim, you had one more concern, or was that your concern?
And now you want to pivot to good things. I tied the policy one into the map.
You know, before we go to good things and recriminations,
we haven't even done Veep Steaks.
All right, let's do Veep Steaks, and then we'll hear from our second sponsor. Veep Steaks.
Okay.
Go.
I don't think there's a good answer. There's fine answers. I think that there's a bunch of bees out there. I don't think that there's a clear good answer is where I've come down on this. I know that's not satisfying to people. But I don't, there's not a,
Tell me more.
What's your big? So let's just take.
I think that Josh Shapiro brings potentially unnecessary.
Gaza. You're worried about the fact that
I'm worried about lefty progressives getting mad at him at Gaza. They're already mad at him about school vouchers, which I don't, obviously I'm for school vouchers, so I don't care about that. But like, I just think that there will be conceivable backlash. He was way out front, correctly criticizing the anti-Semitism on the left. But like, that feels like we're poking the hornet's nest.
Question. A little bit. Can I ask you something? So much of this is about how they handle things, right? Yeah. Let's say you had Josh Shapiro, who is extremely good at talking, and I think knows himself, is very fluid when he talks about his faith. Is it possible that Kamala could be slightly edgier on some of the Gaza issues? He is very pro-Israel, and he's comfortable being. And they talk about the fact that they this is a tough one, and that they like. You know, like,
yeah, maybe. Okay. Yeah, sure.
Anytime you're talking about that, you're losing.
Yeah, that might be true.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I'm not saying he's a my point is that I think there are a lot of perfectly okay options. I'm not in love with any option the more I think about all of them, is I guess my point.
So I would say I've gotten there a little bit too on, I see more downsides as I've thought harder about people. That is Josh Shapiro's biggest downside. Yeah. Now, that being said, hasn't hurt him in Pennsylvania. And
it's totally different.
Why?
I mean, like, you just get thrust into this national political dialogue that, like, you don't have to worry about.
So maybe it costs, does it hurt them with lefty kids in California or New York?
Yeah.
Like, does it cost them in
Ann Arbor?
Yeah.
To me, though, it's not about, I'm not about counting the ledger of voters who are mad versus, I'm talking about vibes. Does it, like, the vibes are great.
Yeah.
Let's just roll. Like, I'm kind of like, can we roll with good vibes? I just worry that maybe that it salts the vibes a little bit. I love Josh Shapiro.
Give me a rundown. Who else is on your?
I think Mark Kelly is not that good of a talker.
This is the problem with Mark Kelly is he looks great on paper, and all the people who are arguing for Mark Kelly have not spent that much time listening to Mark Kelly.
Right. He's totally fine. Great on paper. Great on ads. The nice thing about Mark Kelly, when you think about positives, is it's the 3-month campaign with Kamala. Like, we can just put astronaut ads on TV. I'm cool. It would be nice to have a VP that you could really make J.D. Vance look like a pathetic phony on that debate stage.
Yeah.
And,
how about John Fetterman?
Hard hits.
What do you think about John Fetterman?
I think John Fetterman would be a great pick, but I also think that, similarly to Shapiro, could cause some controversy, might undermine the mental acuity argument.
You need to stop it with Fetterman.
I'm now like kind of secretly obsessed with Chris Murphy because he can talk, and I don't think he can make any down. He has no downsides. I think he can talk. Bashir looked very nervous on Morning Joe. Tim Walz is kind of the hot thing of the moment, but he like went very far left in Minnesota in policies and was very far left on COVID stuff. And he's like. You know, I don't know. Him and Roy Cooper don't exactly look like the future. If you're doing future versus past, just like looking at the picture. So anyway, all of these two and Gretchen, and then you get into, okay, well, let's go to gays or a woman. And then I come back to like, are we sure we want to do that
Can we talk about that piece for a second, though? Let's just talk about the fact that literally, if you go by who is the most qualified, it is Gretchen or Pete.
Yeah.
And you're telling me I got to go with a straight white guy. Who's the DEI pick? Okay. I have to do a straight
Andy
white
Bashir
man.
Andy Bashir is the DEI pick.
He is. Because Pete would be great at this. And Gretchen is the best one. But everyone's like, really? Can't have two women on the ticket. No one would say that about two white guys.
Really? Is she the best one?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Big Gretch is the governor.
Look, if she's the best one, then they might as well do it. But I think she doesn't want to. Right? I mean, it seems like she's gone out of her way to try to tamp this down.
I think she is not going to do it. Yeah, I think she's gone and said she can't.
Which there's no reason for her to do unless she really doesn't want to be considered.
Yeah, I've put a negative frame on all this. I guess my point is, like, part of the reason why it feels so negative is that, like, the vibes feel so good right now. You're almost like, why mess with it?
Yeah.
You know, like, I don't think so. A positive. In a lot of ways, it's a positive. It's like, right now, you don't feel like she really needs somebody to boost this thing. And so in some ways, that's a positive. And I think that all of the people we've discussed, every single person to me seems like totally fine, totally good. It's just like none of them, I don't look at any of them and say, oh yeah, that's going to give us exactly what
we
need.
Can I tell you what I think the person needs to do more than anything? And this is where I've been kind of anti-Kelly because I don't think Kelly is particularly good at talking. I don't think he'd make mincemeat out of J.D. Vance. But Bashir or Kelly, like what you sort of want is the whitest white dude, right? The broiest bro. To just stand there and be like, Kamala's the best. She is crushing it. Look how good she is, right? Like, you are trying to build her up in the minds of people who look at those guys and say, like, I don't know, that guy who kind of looks like me says this. The broiest bro, like, somebody who is building a permission structure for just, like, other dudes. Like, isn't that what we're looking for right now?
So who's that?
Well,
Fetterman.
That's not Fetterman. If you can't do Josh Shapiro because of Israel, Fetterman, who I have not minded this about him personally, but he has been like sticking his finger in the eye of progressives on this.
Isn't that even better?
I don't know. Mm. I don't know.
Here's my question. How much does personal chemistry with Kamala matter? Because if the deal is you want to keep these vibes going, then you really would like somebody who she's going to have a good time with and trust, right?
I agree.
I don't know who that person is.
It's Pete.
No, is that
I don't
Pete?
Think so I think it's one of her AG buddies. I think that goes back
you
to
think
Josh,
it's Cooper?
Roy Cooper, and Bashir.
Then do
I think
Josh.
The reason why Josh, Roy Cooper, and Bashir all kept being mentioned is because they were in that posse of AGs with Beau Biden and Kamala at the same time. So they went to those meetings and hung out. Like, so that's the three. That's why those three keep getting mentioned.
Honestly, I really believe that this election is not going to be decided by Gaza. I'm sorry. Like, Tim, you were saying, are we really going to go to autocracy because of immigration? Well, if we're going to go to autocracy, not going to go to autocracy for immigration, then we're really not going to go to it because of Gaza. And she brings youth and excitement. And this is an issue that will be so far in the rearview mirror that it's like it happened a million years ago.
I agree with that unless somebody brings it back. Because I do agree with Tim. I'm very pro Shapiro on this in terms of political talent. And I do think everyone's like, well, vice presidents don't deliver states. And I'm like, it's the last time we even had somebody that could test that proposition was what, Gore in Tennessee? Well, obviously it was like a deliver Tennessee.
This is none Harry Lichtman thing. Somebody sent me this and they're just like, oh, if you look at the political science, the VP only helps their own state 2 points. And I was like, well, yeah, Dick Cheney was from Wyoming. Okay, like, no, it's different when it's
also
popular
if the Democrat
governor
can pick up 2 points in Pennsylvania, then they're likely to win, right?
Two points
in Pennsylvania is a lot.
He's going to pick up more than that. He would add a lot in Pennsylvania. Yeah. He's got 60% approval rating. Yeah.
That's why I come back to him too.
Yeah, I do keep coming back to him ultimately as the best choice. I also think, look, senators are tough. They took a million votes on things, can hang all kinds of stuff around their neck. So part of me is just saying, like, political talent-wise, if you've really looked at them, Shapiro and Pete and Gretchen are the three most politically talented, and I think you basically can't do Gretchen and Pete because we
the Josh
can't
Shapiro
have nice
porn cut podcast comes back to Josh Shapiro. Surprising.
But also, I don't know, like, he's a post-Trump figure, he's a post-COVID figure, like, he is the future, he's new. If you're underscoring new
and
he's
Dems
a good
like
hang
new. Yeah. Dems like
but
new.
Also,
Dems,
he's a good hang.
And neutralizes
like
the Pennsylvania ads, kind of all the stuff we were talking about fracking. He just goes out there and is like, what are you talking about? I love my Pennsylvania frackers.
Yeah.
That's
right. I think he's
Shapiro.
He's the safest choice, and he's probably the best choice.
Yeah.
There.
And I also think he is nuanced on the issue of Israel in a way that like Fetterman's not.
Yeah, it was again, this whole thing was not about what anything Josh said about Shapiro. Right. It's in Israel. It's just about vibes.
Yeah.
Well, can I just say one last thing? Because Tim was like, we had a negative frame on this. I do want to say It's an embarrassment of riches, actually. Like, I don't think there's a bad choice. I don't think I don't think they're B minuses. They're all like B pluses.
Yes, yeah, this isn't like could go Rubio up versus Vance.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's right.
How great has everything been? How great has everything been? That's all. That's all. I don't know how much even we need to do of recriminations because we are so right. We've never been more. I've never been more right about anything in my life. JBL is always right. Sarah's always right. I'm not always right. Sometimes I'm wrong. But the most insane thing about the last month has been that it was so fucking obvious what needed to happen. It was insanely obvious. Every data point, quantitative, qualitative. Sarah's focus groups. Strangers I was meeting at the bar because I couldn't talk about anything else. Text messages I was receiving from people I'd never heard of. The American people were desperate to not have to choose between these two old men. They were desperate. People were starving. Like, just give me something to be happy about. Give me something to be excited for. And then it happened. And oh my God, shocking. Everybody that said that they wanted something else and were so excited about it was excited. And they're giving money and they're volunteering and they're doing memes with Charlie XCX and they're dancing on TikTok and they're telling their friends and people are listening to podcasts about it and they want to go knock on doors. No shit. No shit. Obviously, it was going to be this exciting. It's what everybody we all knew and said. And yet we had to be lectured by people that were like, oh, you don't understand how the Democratic Party. You guys are never Trumpers. You don't understand how the Democrats work. We're a bunch of cats. It's like herding cats. It'll be chaotic around here.
It wasn't just Dems. There were plenty of others.
Who wanted to
provide very condescending and some very vicious feedback on our position. And I would just like to say, this is my only thing I'm going to say about all this. But there were people who were relentless on the idea that we ought to ignore all the polls. Ignore all the focus groups. Focus groups are stupid. How dare you talk to regular people and try to understand how they were thinking about this?
They're capricious. You never know.
Treated us like we knew nothing about politics. We never did a real campaign. Let me tell you what. This was the thing for people with eyes, right? This was just... And so I think that people... And if you followed some of these people and you were listening to them and you were weighing like who, and look, it's too early for like a full victory lap on, hold on. I'm just like, Kamala has to win and Kamala has to win.
But actually, no, she doesn't. but this question of whether speeding forth into the iceberg and telling everyone that said that there's an iceberg in front of you, that they're an idiot, that they're racist, that they're secret Trumpers, that they don't know what they're doing. If you were in that camp, okay, you are a fucking moron. Because the iceberg was right in front of your eyes. All you had to do is open your eyes and see the iceberg. And just because we're now turning doesn't mean we're not going to hit it. We might still hit it because, like, we waited so fucking long. We might still hit the iceberg.
That's right.
All right? But, like, the iceberg was right there. There was no hope in front of us. And a bunch of people were telling us that if we said, hey, let's turn.
The fundamentals.
You don't understand how data really works and how the elections work. And it's about motivations and demographics. And shut the fuck up. And you're not listening. You're not listening to the Democratic base. You're not listening to real voters.
Yes, we are.
Yes, we are. Yeah, we are. It's you that is a fucking grifter online that knew we were right in private in almost every case. A few of these people were idiots, but a couple of them knew we were right. But, you know, when people are posting on the internet that, like, my daughter is going to hate me because I didn't listen to black women. My daughter's going to fucking hate me because I didn't listen to black women. It wasn't like, oh, Jerry 82 with 12 followers.
It was like
people that were paid by the fucking Biden campaign, by the way. People that were influencers who were paid by the fucking Biden campaign attacking me and my family for just saying, hey guys, let's not silently go into the night of Donald Trumpian autocracy and let's try to run a campaign. That was my only opinion.
You were treated.
So anyway, fuck them.
Extraordinarily poorly. It was awful. You are entitled to your rage because because now I know what you're talking about, and I was thinking of it more just like people. And I think one of the things just to understand, there's two things I want to add on to this. One is the number of people that we knew publicly were saying things that privately were like gut checking with us.
Yeah.
So like
those people were, are never invited onto the Bullock podcast again.
That's right. So like they were being much more confident publicly than they actually were privately.
Yeah.
And so for them to come at us was like doubly insulting.
So I totally understand like being wrong. I mean, I'm not often, but I understand when people
I'm wrong
are
all the time.
Hold on. I'm going to litigate with you in a minute.
Hold on. But the number of people who in my life were like, you know, oh, you are terrible, blah, 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 and this is never going to happen. The number of comments, like, stop talking about this because this will not happen. Why are you talking? It's not going to happen. And I kept saying, okay, well, email me when it does.
How many emails?
The total number of emails I've gotten on that?
Zero.
Yes, you were absolutely right that he's going to drop out. Turns out you were right. I was, I agreed with you, but was like 10% less certain than you. However, if you go back and listen to the secret pod from the last, I don't know, 2 years, it's just me saying all the voters and everybody else, this guy is too old. He shouldn't be running. Yeah. And you did not agree with me on that. You made all the arguments for why the advantages of incumbency and all this stuff were important for him. And I just, it's fine. You can wear your t-shirt, but I just, from a, I was
true until it wasn't.
No, right?
I mean, the guy had a health event in front of 50 million people.
It was always true. It was always true.
Bill Kristol was the really right one, not any of us.
That's true. Because then,
I started, mean to him too.
Then I fought with Bill. I actively fought with Bill when he was doing the Dean Phillips stuff. Because I was like, it's just not helpful, man. He's going to be the nominee. There's nothing to do. And I wish, well, I don't know. Actually, I don't know what else there was, like, but I do agree everything changed after the debate because we all saw the same thing. There was nothing to do at that point.
Thank God they held the debate.
Thank God they did
this
that debate
again,
early.
It's another, if she winds up getting elected president, the entire thing is going to look like the universe conspired for her.
Yeah.
Right? The idea that like that there were going to be two debates with one debate in June, which never happened before, right? And then he has this freeze and everybody realizes she's the only option. She's standing right there. She finally gets the nomination. There's only 100 days left. Like it will look like it was some gigantic Rube Goldberg contraption, which fate had built to make Kamala Harris save the Republic.
Let's all
hope we get that lucky.
What a great show. I've got to go on NPR right now.
Long
this, so
show.
I should maybe tone down my views a little bit.
Dallas, September 5. Go to thebulwark.com/events. It'll be a very excellent time without me. Adam Kinzinger. Sarah Longwell, Tim Miller, who else is going to be there?
It's going to
be great. Bill Kristol, you can tell
Sonny.
Bill how right he
Sonny
was.
Sonny will be there. If you want to come be me, if you want to come be mad at Sonny, come do it in person.
Come be mean to Sonny.
And meet him. Meet him. He's wonderful. He's a lovely guy.
We'll have a Sonny Bunch dunk tank. Everybody will love it. All right, guys, great show. Long show. Bye.